Views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
With a price tag, you a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you, when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek, and they made it with a bat. Fuck them protests in them sit-ins, told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings, turned around a pump crack right up in your city, and they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin, called the National Guard up because we ride what I got up, and that was building your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Chase the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. For those of you who don't know,
welcome to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed is in on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines called USA Inc. Today's date, it is a Monday. It is June 22nd, 2015. Good to be with you on this Monday afternoon because it means that I made it through the weekend alive. Not that I go out much or engage in anything to put myself in greater danger in terms of moving behind these enemy lines, but hey, I'm alive, and it's a lot of people that's not alive. And I still just thinking about those non-terrorist victims and whatnot, and it's just been weighing on me. Not just their murder, but, you know, some of the responses from black people, it just really got me feeling kind of down today. But I'm gonna try not to let that affect my professionalism, in doing this broadcast. Now we have two guests lined up for you today. As you can see from the title, we're going to talk about modern policing equals modern slavery. And during the first hour of today's broadcast, we will be joined by one of our elders. We will talk to Mr. Peter C. Harry, who is a longtime resident of Jennings and Floridale Hills, which is in Missouri. Jennings is the town where Darren Wilson used to work for that Jennings Police Department, but we know that that police department got disbanded because of the racism and white supremacy that they was practicing. And it got disbanded, and Darren Wilson made his way over to Ferguson. Well, again, Mr. Harry has lived in that area for a very long time, and so we want to talk to him today about his experiences in that area in dealing with police. But I also want to take a look at a recent report by Amnesty International, which is titled Deadly Force, Police Use of Lethal Force in the United States. There is actually going to be a webinar. I think there's one today, but I signed up for the one for Wednesday night at 9 o'clock PM, and we are going to broadcast that live on New Abolitionist Radio. So I think it is important, you know, to gather as much information as possible. And we know that policing, you can't have slavery without police. They the modern day slave catchers. So, that falls right in line with the work or the information we put out on New Abolitionist Radio, which comes on every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock PM Eastern time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Now, speaking of New Abolitionist Radio, during the second hour, we will be joined by Mr. Max Parthas, who is a co-host and co-producer of New Abolitionist Radio. He's also a well-known, internationally known, has won many awards in the area of spoken word artistry. And so he will be joining us during the second hour. He was, he lives in South Carolina, for those that don't know Max. And he actually lives near where that terrorist came from, Dylan Ruff. And so Max, like many others, were descending upon the South Carolina's Capitol State House over the weekend, and he will join us to tell us some of the things that he saw, you know, give us a field report on what he saw. He's already shared some interesting things with me this morning about what he saw there, but he was there not to protest the Confederate flag, and even though I feel like that is constructive activity, there is no need for black people or any people who do not want their tax dollars paying for symbols of white supremacy. There's nothing wrong with them exercising their voice and their power and saying we don't want our tax dollars supporting or maintaining these symbols of white supremacy. So we talked about a little bit about that. We'll talk about it again once Max joins us. But he was there, again, not to protest the flag, but he was there to make the connection to slavery. And not talking, like Max says, we ain't talking about no metaphorical slavery. We're talking about real slavery. The slavery that was never abolished in the United States, despite the lies that's being put forth by film, by media, by politicians, by so-called historians, in textbooks and all of that. And so, yeah, Max was down there to spread the message of new abolitionism. All right. We are just continuing the work of the abolitionists in this country because the problem has not been solved. And so, we need to resurrect that movement. Now, we also want to discuss with him a new article by Chris Hedges. I think it's published on, and I've linked to this stuff. Yeah, it's published on truthdig.com. Chris Hedges, he does excellent journalistic work pertaining to slavery. This article is titled America's Slave Empire. And again, it is always important to use words that accurately describe whatever it is you're talking about. And when we're talking about prisons and what other people are talking, calling mass incarceration, no, informed people know that we're talking about slavery. So call it what it is. We don't need to come up with any kind of political correct terms. And I'm not saying that people who use those terms are meaning to confuse us or to be deceptive. It's possible that that may be with some, but I'm not going to attribute that to everyone who uses that term, because, you know, whether people want to admit it or not, many of us just parrot. We parrot the media. We parrot because we don't know any better, because we haven't taken the time to do our own self-studying. So, you know, I'm not bashing anybody that uses the term mass incarceration, but we do want to start using, encourage the use of the correct language when you're talking about a problem that affects millions of people in this country. All right. And also, we will be talking about the Free Alabama movement, which has sprang up in the prisons in Alabama that are fighting against prison slavery. I do believe we are joined by our first guest, Mr. Peter C. Harry. Do we have you on the line, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for joining us today, sir. First off, I understand that you are the father of one of our Black Talk Radio Network family members. Your daughter is Sister Cece. That's correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I just want to let you know that she has been a great help to this network. She hasn't been working with us very long, but she has been instrumental in helping us, you know, work behind the scenes to help us, you know, get information out to our people. So I just wanted to let you know we appreciate your daughter and cause she's a reflection of her parents. So thank you.
Great.
Now I understand that, you know, I was just telling the listeners that you're a longtime resident of Jennings and is it pronounced Floridale Hills?
Yes, sir.
Yes, and so I understand that you're a longtime resident of that area. And like I was just telling the listeners, if they remember some of the coverage during Ferguson and the Michael Brown killing that, what's his name, Darren Wilson, how he winded up in Ferguson was because the Jennings Police Department had been disbanded because of similar pattern and practices of racism, police brutality, and corruption. And so that is that correct, sir, your understanding as well, that Darren Wilson used to work for the Jennings Police Department?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. They were all working together, and St. Louis County came in and busted them up, and but see, that's what they went in there, and it was like they just threw a bomb off in the middle of them, and the bomb exploded, and all the crooked people, a few went over here, a few went over there, and they just spread it out, and now we got it's just a mess everywhere you go, man. It's a mess.
Yes, I certainly agree that that is a problem. If we even look at the murder of Tamir Rice by the Cleveland police officer, Timothy Lowman, he was fired from another police department, and his performance review said that he was so immature and so unprofessional and that he shouldn't even have a gun. But yet he was able to go to Cleveland and get a job with the Cleveland Police Department. And so, yeah, this is a pattern and practice we see all over the country. And there, I'm not seeing anything being addressed in terms of politicians talking about legislation or creating databases so that, you know, these so-called bad apples can be prevented from just going to another town, another city, and getting a job. And so, yeah, you are right to point out that that is a problem. So, sir, how long have you lived in that area?
I've lived in the area practically, I guess, almost 20 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been the same old thing ever since I've been there, man. You know, they dog the brothers out, and they take what money they can out of them, and if you ain't got money, they'll lock you up and put you in jail till you go get some money from them. Mm-hmm. You know? But that's the way it goes in the land over here, where if you black, you got to stay back. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just where we are, man. And I'm hoping that it can get better through some of these meetings that they having out here.
Can you, well, that kind of ties into a question I definitely want to hear from you about what you are hearing in some of these meetings. But can you tell me what happened? What action did the community take for the Jennings Police Department to get disbanded in the first place? Cause I never heard about, you know, any kind of mass movement in Jennings like, you know, we have seen pop up around the country.
No. The reason, Jennings Police Station was disbanded was because they had got a lot of money from the federal government to do sobriety checkpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said that they had did these sobriety checkpoints, but they didn't, and they put the money in their pocket. So that's why that was the main reason that they disbanded the police department. You know, all of it didn't come out, just the big part that really took the icing off the cake.
So if I understand you correctly, their theft of federal funding is what caused the, I guess the federal government, the Justice Department to investigate them. And then that is when this other stuff, this pattern and practice of racism and corruption was documented.
Yes. That's what you got there. You know, so now you move one police department in and you move another one in and you basically got the same thing.
That was going to be my next question, was that after that disbanding of the Jennings Police Department, and I understand from what I read is that, you know, and of course you would know better than me. I don't always trust everything I read in the media, but I read that they disbanded the entire police department, brought new people in.
Yes, the entire police department from the chief all the way down to the janitor.
And so they brought new people in, and so what I'm hearing from you is that those same patterns and practice of racism and corruption persisted
just
with
kept right on going, you know. It's just different people running the program, that's all, you know. Mm-hmm. I was walking my dog the other day, and I had an officer to pull up there to the stop sign, and he looked at me, and he looked at my dog, and I had a stick, because I'm kind of getting up in age, you know, so I had a stick to kind of walk with every cane. And I had a dog to attack my dog one day, and I said, well, from now on, I'm going to carry something, you know, in case I ever get attacked again, to kind of beat him off with. Mm-hmm. And that officer rolled up there, and he looked at me, and he said, you ain't hitting that dog with the stick, are you? And I just looked at him and I said, man, I wouldn't hit this dog with this stick for nothing in the world. That's my best friend. Why would I hit it with a stick? You know? And he went on and he kind of glared at me with, you know, if I could have read through his eyes, it wasn't very nice what he was saying about to me, you know? But just like everything else, you got some good police and you got some bad police, just like in everything else, you know. Just how you gonna get in there and weed the bad ones from the good ones? It's gonna take a while.
Well, let me just tell you about some other programming that I think is coming up tonight. Let me see, that's the wrong one. Because there's a white former police officer who will be on, yes, that's right, that'll be on our network tonight on one of our independent media partners, The Context of White Supremacy. They will be interviewing Chris Osterndorf about good cops and good white people. Well, good cops versus bad cops, because it is his contention is that how can you have good cops but then have all of these bad cops? Because you would seem like the good cops would be turning in the bad cops. And we're not seeing. We have seen. So I do want to acknowledge, like in the case of, I think his name is Joe Glass. He was a former Baltimore police detective. He reported two patrol officers who he saw beating up a handcuffed black man. Then there was another officer in New York City who sued the New York Police Department for forcing him to fill quotas in engaging in racial police department. But, you know, the number of these good cops who turn whistleblowers, I mean, I probably can count them on one hand. And so, you know, I'm just asking a question, sir, but how logical is it for us to say or listen to somebody telling us about all of these good cops and we just got a few bad apples when this is systemic? This is a systemic national problem with all of this police brutality, killings, you know, putting us in slavery, stealing money from us. So, you know, I would encourage you, because I'm certainly going to tune in tonight to that program, which you'll be able to find it on our network, Black Talk Radio Network, on the radio station of The Context of White Supremacy. So, I mean, do you understand, you know, where this former police officer is coming from about, you know, this conception about good cops, and how can you have good cops and when the whole institution is bad?
Yeah, Yeah, you know, and you know, it's kind of hard to tell on your buddy, you know, especially when, you know, they got that.
Important security message. Please call the number.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I'm dealing with some pop-up ads that, somebody had it embedded on my site, and that's what you heard. I'm sorry about that. Please continue.
Yeah, well, it's like a brotherhood, you know, they gotta stick together. And that thing about that, grand jury investigation, I think that's just a big hoax to make the people think that something is going on, cause you can't talk to the grand jury. Anything the grand jury do, you can't go question the grand jury. I don't even believe it is a damn grand jury.
Speaking of Ferguson in St. Louis County, I know that Bob McCullough, Robert McCullough, who is the St. Louis, chief prosecutor or district attorney, and that he came out to the media and was saying this and that about his grand jury. And I had read not long after that one of the people who were on the grand jury actually sued them so that they could speak to the media, because they said this prosecutor is lying about what went on, and all of us was not in agreement that, you know, Darren Wilson didn't commit a crime. Some of those people wanted to indict him, but then you had the prosecutor coming out giving a false tale, like, you know, well, the grand jury, they were all in agreement, and they said that, you know what I'm saying? So that secret grand jury, I understand why it was started, but I think that it's become more of a problem than any kind of problems it was trying to address.
So anytime this thing went around the country, man, and I've watched it, and I know that man killed this brown boy around the corner here. I know he killed him because I saw him when he did it, and he shot him dead. And then the grand jury come back and say, not guilty. And then I watched it. I just watched it go around the country. And they give it to the grand jury. And the grand jury come back and say, not guilty. No, something wrong there, man.
Yeah, something is wrong there. And, you know, I know it's a lot of people out there that don't believe in participating in politics, and therefore they don't vote. But that's a way that you get on these grand juries. Now, with that said, I have been a registered voter since I was 18 years old, and I've only been chosen, called one time for jury duty, and I'm 47 years old now.
Yeah, well, good to you, because I've never been called.
And my mother hasn't either, sir.
No.
So, so again, you know, there's this pattern in practice all over the country where they're keeping us.
The people that they want in there, man, the people that they know go vote the way that they want it to go.
Mm-hmm.
See, because I got into a little legal trouble, and I was under the impression that I was innocent until proven guilty. And that's what I went into court with. On my mind that I was innocent until proven guilty. And I went up in there, and they didn't have a speck of evidence against me. It was wrote on the paper, it said evidence. There was nothing written there. Mm-hmm. And they gave me close to a year. And that's what woke me up, that we ain't got no justice nowhere in this system, man.
I can identify with that happening to you, cause it happened to my, youngest brother, and they didn't have, they accused him of a breaking and entering into this white person's trailer. There's a lot of trailer parks. I live in a little rural area. You know, and so they had charged my brother, and I was in the military at the time. I wasn't even home. But my mother was telling me about it, and, you know, when I did get to come home on leave, you know, I looked at the transcripts, and they accused my brother of breaking and entering, said that he broke into this man's trailer. The man came home and shot the person who had broke into his trailer. And it was even reported in the news that the intruder had been shot because they found blood. But my brother had never been shot, and they never recovered any stolen property that he was supposed to have steal. There was no evidence presented in trial, but he had an all white jury and they convicted him. And my brother spent about 5 years in prison behind that.
Yeah.
It happens to a lot of us.
You know, when I was basically going through the whole thing, the cops, they really tripped me out. They came in and at first they were real nice. They said, well, come on, what they got me, they said that I touched a little white girl. And I told them, I said, no, that didn't happen. So they said, well, we're going to go talk to the neighbors. I said, what you going to go talk to the neighbors for? There was nobody in the room but me, the little girl's mother, and her. What are you going to talk to the neighbors? Well, you'd be surprised what the neighbors know. They left and they came back in about 4 hours. And they told me, they said, now this time, the whole attitude changed. And they shoved these papers at me, and they said, we went and talked to the prosecuting attorney, and he told us to have you to write it down, what you say happened, and we're going to use it against you to send your black ass to the penitentiary. That's just what they told me. And I said, no comment, and pushed the paper back. They pushed it back at me, said, well, write that on that end. And I wrote no comment and pushed the paper back at it. And they took that and got me 6 months, man, in the county jail.
Police are not our friends. They are not here to help. You know, they are not officer friendly.
Damn sure don't look like.
Right. And it's important to note that they are the descendants of the slave patrols, and that's their main job today, is to put black people, primarily black people, back into slavery. I do want to open up the phone lines if anybody has any questions, comments, or observations that they would like to share. If you have any questions you would like to ask Mr. Harry, you can give us a call, 530-881-1400. The access code is 549-032#. Of course, once you're in there, you just hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. The other way is to call 704-951-5030. I had spoken to your daughter, or communicated with your daughter earlier, and I had mentioned to her that I wanted to bring up this, report that was published on June 18th by AmnestyUSA.org, Amnesty International. And the name of the report is Deadly Force, Police Use of Lethal Force in the United States. And did you have a opportunity to check out some of that report?
Yeah, she read a little bit of it to me.
Was there anything that she read to you that stuck out to you about this report?
Not really. I really wasn't up on that report too much.
Okay. I would encourage everyone to check out the report. I have linked to it, but I'm going to share this information with the listeners. This kind of like comes in the area of, we have another program on Friday nights called Race Treaty, and they look at everything from a human rights perspective through international law, through UN human rights treaties that the United States has ratified. And, you know, it's talking about the use of lethal force here in the United States. And I'll just share a couple of these paragraphs. The use of lethal force by law enforcement officers raises serious human rights concerns, including in regard to the right to life, the right to security of the person, the right to freedom from discrimination, and the right to equal protection of the law. The United States has a legal obligation to respect, protect, and fulfill these human rights, and has ratified, and that's key, has ratified the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, as well as the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, which explicitly protects these rights. Now, it talks about the fundamental duties of police officers under these treaties that the United States has signed. One of a state's most fundamental duties, which police officers, as agents of the state, must comply with in carrying out their law enforcement duties, is to protect life, and in pursuing ordinary law enforcement operations, using force that may cost the life of a person cannot be justified. International law only allows police officers to use lethal force as a last resort in order to protect themselves or others from death or serious injury. That's something we hear a lot of the defenders of these killer cops say. But the United Nations basic principles on the use of force and firearms provide that law enforcement officials shall not use firearms against persons except in self-defense or the defense of others against the imminent threat of death or serious injury, and that in any event, intentional lethal use of firearms may only be made when strictly unavoidable in order to protect life. And this is the last paragraph. Furthermore, international law enforcement standards require that force of any kind may be used only when there are no other means available that are likely to achieve a legitimate objective. If the force is unavoidable, it must be no more than is necessary and proportionate to achieve the objective, and law enforcement must use it in a manner designed to minimize damage or injury, must respect and preserve human life, and ensure medical aid and provide as soon as possible to those injured. But one of the key things that I did not bring up is that under these treaties that they have signed is that we don't even know the amount of lethal force. In other words, we don't even know the amount of people being killed. There's a database called killedbypolice.net. There's another database by the UK Guardian, which is a publication based in Britain, and they have started keeping statistical data. But we can't even trust those numbers because police departments are not being forced to report all the killings that they are involved in. So when we hear about a number like every 28 hours a black person is killed by police, that's just a rough estimate based on media reports. Because again, police are not reporting like they are required to report under international law according to the treaties the U.S. government has signed. So do you think that when we participate in any kind of public forums or when we talk to politicians and things of that nature, that instead of us talking about the Constitution or any of this stuff, that we need to be bringing up the obligations of the United States government and these states under these international law and treaties that they have signed? Are you there? Yeah, I'm saying, do you think that we need to start getting in the habit and practice of challenging them under international law?
Well, you know, I was listening to what you were saying, and, you know, you were talking about what they signed and what they said they were going to do and mm-hmm. all of that. But then, when it all boils down to it, and they got you down here on the street
right.
in the back of this alley, they're going to do to you what they want to do to you.
That's true.
If it comes down, if they had to bust your head, and it comes down to it, they're going to say, oh, well, he was resisting arrest.
Right. Totally understood. And here's my position. While I do support, you know, spreading the information about the United States government and the state's obligations under these international treaties and bringing that up whenever they're trying to point the finger at another country, like say Iran, like China, like, you know, any other, they love pointing right. the fingers at other places. And right. I think that when they do that, we need to point the finger right back at them and ask them, how are you living up to your obligations under the same treaties that you're trying to bash somebody over the head with? But the bottom right. line is, sir, you are correct. That all of that international law ain't no, it's not worth a hill of beans out here on the yeah. street. Because
right. they got you back in the alley, mm-hmm. telling you what they're getting ready to do to you, cause this is real what they're getting ready to do to you right here.
That's
you
right.
You know, and if they had to, they'll put an end to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and like I have often stated to some of my friends that work in the arena of human rights, not that I'm criticizing them or telling them that what you're doing isn't worthwhile or it's not constructive, because I think they are engaged in constructive activity. But I'll try to point out to them, though, is that, well, who's going to force them to follow these treaties? The UN,
right.
The United Nations is not sending troops over here. The United Nations is not talking about any kind of embargo or any kind of, you know, things that they do, punitive actions against the United States. None of that is happening. So, I mean, they can sit up there and say the United States ain't doing this or that, but the bottom line comes down to is, you know, if you can't force them to do it, then, hey, you ain't doing nothing but talking.
They ain't gonna do it, man. You remember Martin Luther King?
Yes, sir.
Remember the Kennedy? If you don't agree with what they saying, they put a bullet in your head, man, and end everything that you're about.
So, in your opinion, sir, what do you think, you know, that black people should be doing in the face of all of this terrorism, whether it is a lone wolf terrorist like Dylan?
I think they better go to their local churches and start praying.
And anything in addition to praying, because we know the Bible also says prayer without faith without works is dead, and that you gotta, you know, do some action.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do, man, but, you know, just call into the prayer and just hope things get better, man. That's all I can tell you. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's a very honest answer, sir. We are certainly not going to fault you for being honest and saying, I don't know. Cause there are many, there are many people who are trying to solve this problem, and we have yet to implement a solution. You know, we got all these good theories, and, you know, again, I'm not minimizing any work anyone has put in, but, you know, hey, we're still in the same place. We're still in the same place. Slavery still being practiced. White terrorism is being perpetrated against us. And it's okay to say we don't know. Exactly. So it's certainly okay to say, I don't know, because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that don't know, but they acting like they do know.
Right.
So that's very honest of you, sir. And the only way that we can arrive at applicable or practical solutions is if we're all honest and not trying to sound like, you know, we're experts on this or we have all the answers. Cause I'm here to tell you, I don't have all the answers.
Right. If you did, you'd have it worked out.
Now, you know, you do bring up something that, you know, is being talked about right now in relation to the terrorist attack that happened on the church down there in Charleston, South Carolina. And so, you know, those people were in there praying, all right, and then they were preyed upon. And so that, you know, a lot of people are criticizing Christians and jumping all down their throats and whatnot because they don't see the value of prayer. But then at the same time, the black church, I saw another report of where a black church who before this terrorist attack had started allowing its members, certain members who were trained in firearms and were licensed to conceal and carry, to let them be armed on the premises, you know, so that they can provide protection, because this particular church had been getting threats before. So, sir, are you against, or do you think it's being wise and prudent for that particular church to allow its armed members who are trained in firearm use to provide security for their other members in the church?
Well, brother, I'm going to put it like this. If they feel more safer with somebody standing outside with a gun stuck down in their pants, well, just let them be, man, you know, because I'm for any kind of peaceful thing that goes on, man. And, you know, if they keep the peace some kind of way, let's go with it.
Understood. Understood. Okay, so Now, I wanted to ask you, before I forget, I had talked to you earlier and you, I mean, we were speaking earlier and you mentioned, that, you know, some, there are meetings that are occurring in St. Louis. So have you had an opportunity to attend any of these meetings? And if you have, what are you hearing from the people in these meetings? Are you hearing anything constructive or are you just hearing a lot of frustration? What are you hearing in these meetings?
Well, I really haven't been in touch with anybody that's really attended any meetings because the meetings occur like at, say, 3, 4 o'clock, stuff like that. And I'll be just sometimes shifting gears at work, man, trying to make ends meet. I really don't have time to go to the meetings and stuff, and I don't know nobody that actually goes.
That's very interesting, and you make a very good point. So it would make more sense to have these meetings on a Saturday.
In the evening time.
Yeah, in the evening or on the weekend, you know, because a lot of people do work second shift or work third shift. But it does seem pretty strategic to have the meeting be around 4 o'clock. So, I mean, that's like heading in the rush hour.
I figured, well, that meeting for somebody else today for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about that. Why would you have a meeting to discuss community issues at 4 o'clock when people have to attend to their children that are getting out of school, like you mentioned? Some people still at work, and it's just a lot of stuff going on at that time. So it just seems strategic that they don't want anybody coming to those meetings. So that is why they chose that time. Does that make sense to you?
That's the way I looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I looked at it.
I would agree with that assessment. I would agree with that assessment.
Yeah.
So, on this issue of police corruption, we do appreciate you telling us and informing us that even after the Jennings Police Department was disbanded, soon after, with all new people, it was the same old, same old.
Same old thing. Mm-hmm. That's different things.
So is there anything that you would like to say in closing on this issue? Any final thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, the only thoughts that I could give them is just like I told you before, brother, let them go to their churches and just pray this as hard as they can because they done prayed up to this far and look how far we done come. We ain't got as far to go as we had before, but just got a little bit
farther to go,
man.
All right, sir. Well, I want to thank you again for speaking with us today, taking time out of your day to come on and share your personal story about what you have observed while living in that particular area behind these enemy lines. And you have a great evening, sir. And please stay in touch and be careful out there.
All right, we sure will. You take care of yourself now.
Thank you, sir. I will do my best. Good evening.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That was one of our elders, Mr. Peter C. Harry, calling from the area known as Jennings and Floridale Hills, Missouri. We're going to take a station identification break, play a couple of promos and a song, and then we'll come back, and I will check the phone line, see if anybody have any thoughts. I will share my thoughts as we get ready to welcome in Max, who should be calling in. Max Parthis should be calling in here at the top of the hour as we talk about things that he observed down there in South Carolina on the State House grounds and his effort to spread the message of abolitionism to new people, hoping to convert them into new abolitionists. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. This program broadcasts every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side.
You live in Houston, Texas. You are invited to the Sunday Out of Acoli Shaka Sankofa Community Garden on the first Saturday of the month up until September to learn gardening skills from the head gardener and build together with the community. They are looking for people to come out ready to work and get their hands dirty. You do not have to have any experience in gardening. All food grown from the garden is available to the community. The garden was named after Sunday Ada Akoli, who is a political prisoner that has been enslaved for more than 40 years, and comrade in struggle, Shaka Sankofa, who was killed June 22nd in 2000. Sunday Ada, when asked what we can do in support of the political prisoner, said, build a garden. We must be able to do for self in the name of self-determination. The garden is located at 2428 Sophomore in Houston, Texas. Again, come out on the first of every month starting around 7 o'clock a.m. If you have an event that is free and open to the public and want to announce it on Black Talk Radio, send an email to admin@blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I'm Tanya Free. We're back live this week, and we will take a deeper look into the racist-driven murder of 9 African-American men and women in a Charleston, South Carolina church, and how the community and parishioners have responded to this terrorist act. Let's talk about why the Confederate flag is still flying on the South Carolina state grounds, and what's your take on the president's call for comprehensive gun control? And let's revisit Rachel Dolezal, former white NAACP chapter president who identifies as black. These stories and more this Wednesday on the Tanya Free and Friends Talk Show. Join the conversation 2 p.m. Eastern and 1 p.m. Central.
The Tanya Free and Friends Talk Show, your destination for the best in social and political straight talk. Join the conversation Wednesdays.
This is Monroe, North Carolina. The town where local NAACP president Robert Williams created headlines when he said, sometimes violence must be met with violence. Many asked why.
You know, we do whatever we do to survive.
Drop it!
Some of the people who had thought that it would be better to settle these cases violently, I had been able to persuade them that we should use the courts and go into the courts. So this thing had boomeranged. And I was being held responsible for having brought these cases to court. There was a trial where a Negro maid had been kicked down a flight of stairs by a white man, and that this man hadn't even bothered to come to his own trial, and that he had also been acquitted. And there was a demonstration as a result of this in the courtroom by the Negro women of the community. And they had approached me and had said, well, you said that you would see that these people would be punished because through the organization we would have competent counsel, and that if it hadn't been for you, that these people would have been punished. And they wanted to know what I would recommend that they do from then on. And so I recommended that they meet violence with violence, that Negroes must be prepared to repulse attack, that they must be willing to fight, that they must be willing to die and to kill if necessary, that there was no law, there was no 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution of equal protection in the South, and that therefore they didn't have any deterrent, so they would have to create the deterrent force themselves by meeting violence with violence.
That, and until we have a chance to heal, we are likely to continue to do things to hurt each other. And whenever a person of African descent is harmed, an injury to one is an injury to all.
is privacy. If your dad'll struggle, your dad'll win. If your dad not struggling, goddamn it, you don't deserve to win. Let me send peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. Let me say it in the spirit of liberation. I've been gone for a little while. At least my body's been gone. You ain't gotta repeat after me. At least my body's been gone for a little while. But I'm back now, and I believe that I'm back to you. I believe that I'm born to do my job, and I believe that I was born not to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm gonna die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm gonna die from spitting on a piece of ice. I don't believe I'm gonna die because I got a bad heart. I don't believe I'm gonna die because of lung cancer. I believe that I'm going to be able to die what I was just the thing that I was born for. I believe that I'm gonna be able to die high off the people. I believe that I will be able to die as a revolutionary in the international revolutionary protest struggle. And I hope that each one of you will be able to die in the international protest revolutionary struggle. We didn't be living, and I think that struggle's going to come. Why don't you live for the people? Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die?
Welcome back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name again is Scotty Reed. I'm in on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines. And I just don't say that just to be saying it. All the evidence is there. And if you don't recognize the fact that you too live behind enemy lines, then, you know, you may end up being a casualty, you know. And some things that I wanted to address. I'm going to get this out my system, and I'm going to get it out now because I still got this poison in my system. I'm trying to find the words and remain codified in my expressions, but I'm just feeling some kind of way about all of this black Christian bashing. And is it true that some of our Christian brothers and sisters are interpreting the gospels in a way that hasn't been interpreted traditionally by the black church? Because again, I will submit to you that Christianity has not made anyone passive, because if that's true, then it certainly did not work on our African ancestors who were enslaved, who were rebelling, and there were hundreds and hundreds of these rebellions going on, not just in America, South America, the Caribbean, and all of them had been converted, so to speak, to Christianity. But see, they interpret it as a liberation theology, and it certainly did not stop them from picking up arms, and we ain't even got to go back 200 years ago, 100 years ago. We can go to my uncle's, my mother's generation. We can go look at my grandfather. All Christians. Okay. All were attending churches. All read the Bible. But you just heard prior to that clip there of Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton, you know, Robert F. Williams talking about what we must do to protect ourselves. That was Christian too. He's a Christian too. And I know, because I live here in North Carolina, some of the history in North Carolina. I know the history of the black church in North Carolina. I know the black church was holding raffles to raise money to buy rifles. So I just feel like it is incorrect for us to be trying to put that particular segment of our community into a box and attribute what some of them may believe to everyone. That's just simply incorrect. So what we need to be doing, instead of attacking them, and somebody shared a quote with me that I thought was very interesting that directly fits what I'm talking about right now, is that if you seek to liberate, and I'm paraphrasing, but if you're seeking to liberate somebody from mental slavery, if you're looking to liberate their minds, then how do you plan to do that by alienating those people? Because some of the things I have heard, some of the things I have read, that if you was to be on the run from racist white supremacists, I might think twice about offering you safe haven because you don't like us. You don't like Christians. And again, I don't practice organized Christianity. I don't go to church. I don't do none of that. But I do watch over the church that's next door to me, making sure nobody's going in there, burning it down, trashing it, stealing, or anything like that. I pay attention. Every time I see a car pulling up in that parking lot, I'm looking at the license plate. I'm looking at you, and I want you to know I'm looking at you because you might be thinking about doing something you ain't got no business doing. And so even though I no longer engage in organized religion, those still my people. I still love them. I went to school with them. Many of them may be related to me. Some of them are. Not all of them, but some of them are related to me. And I don't want to see nothing happen to them. So if they don't want to pick up the gun, well, guess what? I'll hold it for you. Because I have unconditional love for my people, regardless of their mental state, regardless of their spiritual beliefs. Because like Malcolm X said, and I shared the meme on social media today, don't be so quick to condemn someone because they don't do what you do. They don't believe what you believe. They don't know what you know. Because at one time, you didn't know. You didn't, you know, you weren't the person that you are today. That it's a lifelong process. We are ever supposed to be learning all the time. We have to learn stuff and then we have to unlearn stuff. We have to unlearn the stuff that is incorrect, that has been instilled in us, and we have to learn the correct stuff. But I ain't trying to let you teach me nothing. If you calling me names, if you making blanket statements about my people, I ain't trying to hear that. I ain't trying to hear it. I don't even want you nowhere near me. Take that negative energy, take that hate somewhere else. Cause that's what it is. It's hate. Now it's different. I have heard constructive criticism and people have written and saying that that is incorrect behavior to go forgive your killers, you know, this killer right off the bat. But if you're trying to reach those people that believe that, they're not trying to hear that you yelling at them, you know, just saying all kind of negative things about them. Automatically, naturally, they're going to throw up a defense. They're going to get defensive. And I don't even practice. I don't even practice organized religion, and I get offended. I was offended. Not just offended, it made me angry. Because you're talking about my grandparents, you're talking about my uncles, you're talking about people I know, people I have talked to all over this country. And then if you want to write articles about traditions and the history of the black church, then report all that history. Talk about all of it. Don't just pick and choose what's going to fit your narrative or the story that you're trying to tell. No, tell all of it. Because I will bet you a dime to a dollar. Of course, there's no way for me to prove this. I don't claim to when I make a statement of opinion, that's just it. It's opinion. I don't claim to say that this is a fact because there's no way for me to do a poll of dead Christians. There's no way for me to do a poll of those. How many was it? Almost 200,000 black soldiers who picked up arms to go kill these racist white supremacists that was enslaving their brothers and sisters. How many of them do you think they were Christians? Well, if everybody was converted to Christianity, based on research I've done, then obviously those people weren't passive, or they wouldn't have picked, those black Christians were not passive, or they wouldn't have picked up the gun. Robert Williams in that church that he belonged to that was buying rifles for the black guard, they weren't passive. Or they wouldn't have bought the guns. They wouldn't have been shooting at the Klan and the police. So we had to be very careful when we start applying labels, cause see, we can apply that label to other people. We can apply that label to other religions. Because if you want to say that, you know, if you want to put forth that black Christians are passive because of Christianity, well, I would put to you that from what I've seen based on evidence that all of it, we could say 99.9% of black people is passive in this country, because I don't see any armed rebellions going on right now. The last armed rebellion of note that I'm aware of is Christopher Dorner. And I don't know what Christopher Dorner's religious affiliation was or anything like that. So I'm not going to sit up here and claim that he was a Christian, but I do know that he started off as an American. He joined the military just like me. He was saluting that red, white, and blue flag. He believed in law and order, and he became a cop because he wanted to catch criminals. But once he got in there, what happened? He learned from that experience in his view, his view of things in this country and policing in particular and how it works. You know, it changed his life, his experience. And we know what happened. We know what happened next, right? He started hunting down police officers, terrorists. And we know he met a brutal end, just like Denmark Vesey, one of the founders of that church that was attacked. Brutally, you know, hung, body mutilated. They burnt Christopher Dorner alive. So again, you know, we cannot be making sweeping statements. We cannot be attacking people because I see these white supremacists using that terrorist attack to recruit people to their cause. And they're pushing for unity. And again, I tend to think like a military person, because I spent 6 years in the military. Most of my family members, including uncles, had been in the military. So I know as a part of, you know, propaganda wars, that's part of warfare, is that the enemy you never want to show the enemy any cracks, any weaknesses, any areas that they can exploit in your army. You're not supposed to break ranks. Should we criticize people for their incorrect behavior? Certainly, long as it's constructive and it's not mean-spirited and it's not attacking them. There's a way to do things, people. There's a way to teach people. You're not going to convince me that you're trying to help me when you're acting just as hostile to me as these racist white supremacists. So anyway, we have, what time is it? It's 5:00. Let me see if I can get, Max on the phone. Let me add him to the conversation. So those are just my thoughts. And this is why I really don't talk about religion on this program unless I'm analyzing it in the context of white supremacy, but because it causes division. And we don't, that's the last thing we need right now. That's the last thing we need in the face of this increased terrorism, on us. Max, where you at? Let me call Max. All right. Get Max in. Y'all bear with me as I try to connect with our abolitionist brother, Max Parthas. Again, Max Parthas is one of the co-hosts and co-producers of New Abolitionist Radio. Max, do we have you on the line, sir? Okay, we don't have him on the line yet. Hoping that he has awakened. Let me check the conference line, see if he called in there. Yeah, I do think we have Max on the line. Max, is that you, brother?
That's me, brother. Peace, Scotty.
Max, can you do me a favor? Because I don't know what it is. Whenever I talk to you on the conference line, you are very hard to hear, brother.
All right. Should I call on the other number?
Yes. Yes, if you can. And see if that'd be better, okay?
Would you remind me of the number?
It is 704-951-5030. If you buy your computer, you know, you can hit me up with Skype.
It may take me about 2 or 3 minutes to get it, but I can get on Skype if you prefer.
I would prefer you get on Skype, and while you do that, what I'll do is answer this other call.
All right. Be right back.
All right. Thank you, Max. Area code 305. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate you tuning in and wanting to share your views with us. Please go ahead with your question, observation, or any commentary you have. Area code 305, are you there? Okay.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about what you were saying. I think you're touching on a real good topic. Because I was just having this discussion with my wife, and I mean, it was a heated discussion. You know, I mean, she's kind of religious, and I'm like not religious at all. So, I mean, I think it's real important because, I mean, our people have been involved in this Christianity for centuries. I think like people like Denmark Vesey, the way that they look at Christianity can be a little bit different than the way that some of our people look at Christianity today. Like Denmark Vesey used it as, for a revolutionary aspect. So because like Christianity was kind of forced down on us by our, so-called slave masters, they used that to actually still be able to organize and get the people to try to rebel. And today, I think it's kind of watered down. I mean, I don't think that we should be like trying to lambast our people or whatever, like causing division just because they don't agree with what we believe in. But I do think it is important to try to wake our people up. So I just want to see what your thoughts were on that.
Yes, it is very important to wake our people up. And we are going to have to deal with difficult, topics sometimes, difficult issues sometimes, you know, as we do self-reflection. But at the same time, though, if you are hostile, if you are engaging in name calling and being disrespectful, how receptive do you think that person you trying to teach or reach is going to be to what you have to say?
Right.
I don't.
Well, I think you make a good point.
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't be receptive to it.
Right, right. Well, I mean, like for me, example, like I consider myself a revolutionary in training, so I'm not a fool. Revolutionary, but like I heard a sister in Charleston, like she's going off, which I kind of unite with what she's saying, like mm-hmm. She's calling people. I mean, my wife was totally against it, but I'm kind of for it. Like she's calling people like, look, you coons, and y'all get off your knees for white Jesus. She even calling out the revolutionary brothers, like where y'all at? Y'all ain't out here. You know what I'm saying? And to me, like she's speaking to me, but I don't take it personal. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking that she's upset. Like, this is her way of trying to get us to wake up, you know?
Right.
But I mean, I don't think, yeah, it's not for everyone. So some people is going to turn off. Some people is going to, it can make them kind of rise up or take action. So I think Christianity, it has to be, I think that it was given to us, it was forced down to us, like something that we came over here from Africa practicing what they call voodoo, but which is our spirituality.
30%, sir, and I had just read this, sorry for interrupting you, 30% of the enslaved Africans that were brought here were Muslims. And where did that come from? Many of our people will tell you, and I would tend to agree, is that came from the Arabs' enslavement of Africans. So that's why they Muslim now. So, you know, I just think it's wrong to just be singling out some people who are black Christians when, you know, this mentality, all of us are doing things that are incorrect.
Right. Right. I agree. So yeah, I mean, that's all I really had to say. I just wanted to get your thoughts on.
Well, thank you. And I hope you and your wife and your, disagreement over this issue that, you know, that y'all just agreed to disagree, because y'all man and wife, you know what I'm saying? Can't let nothing divide y'all. Okay.
Oh, definitely. It's healthy discussion. That's all.
All right. Thank you. And you have a blessed day, sir.
All right, brother. You too.
All right. Max. Do we got you on the line, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Coming in loud and clear. Thank you for joining us today, Max. I know you stay busy, man, and you were down there deep behind enemy lines where you live in South Carolina. I was very amped, very hyped to see you in that interview by Rolling Out magazine. And so, man, I was like, really, Max representing, man.
It's all I can do, man. This is what I've dedicated my life to, just like you. It's the most important issue that we have to face as a society today. And at the same time, it's the most ignored issue. We fiddle around the borders of it. We reach in and touch slavery momentarily, and we compare it to things, but we don't actually address slavery. Hell, we don't even recognize it as a real thing. Most international anti-slavery organizations do not recognize legal slavery through the justice system as slavery at all.
And I would also have to say the masses of people, and you're out in the field way more than me, because, you know, managing this station, I'm basically tied down in one place most of the time. But you're out because you're a spoken word artist, and you've incorporated abolitionism when you go to your events and make sure you speak to them about modern slavery. But so you're out there in the field, and so would you say, just based off of the people that you have talked to, that that most of them are ignorant about slavery never being abolished in the first place?
Not only ignorant, but in complete denial. This is the process where cognitive dissonance takes place. When confronting the issue of the reality of slavery, people just don't want to believe it. They can't afford to believe it, because if they accept that as a truth, then everything that they built their lives on might come crumbling down. And in their minds, that's an extremely painful reality to face. So instead of accepting the truth, they accept what's comfortable. So they'll go out and chase other things like, you know, mass incarceration and police brutality and injustice in our justice system and things like that, which are all symptoms of slavery. They're not the actual problem, they're symptoms of the problem. But rather than face that cognitive dissonance, which can be painful to people, they just do what they can and accept lies, like literally accept lies. And you're right, I am in the field on a regular basis. You know, we go across the country talking to people, and the killer, I ain't even going to say his name, the killer came from just like a mile away from us. Like, his mother and father live there right now, just a mile away from us. The morning that he left to go murder people, he spent the night right here in my town.
And guess where he was headed?
To Charleston, South Carolina.
No, they caught him in here, in North Carolina, not even freaking 40 miles from us.
Oh, yeah, at the end of it. And from what I understand, that was there's a refuge there for KKK members or hate groups.
Yeah. They have a sign on the highway that is marking their historical founding of the KKK. I think that was like the first KKK chapter to open up. This is in Shelby, North Carolina. I know people that live in Shelby. It's a high school up there. We used to play them, you know, in sports and stuff. So I know the people up there and whatnot. So yeah, you know, there has been a documentary produced that shows that North Carolina at one time had the largest Ku Klux Klan membership and white nationalist groups in the country. And again, we right across the border. So yeah, him making his way up here to North Carolina, and I know that they were going to hide him out.
I think that they had something to do with it from the very beginning.
Probably.
Helped plan it, and that was his escape route. He was heading to sanctuary where they would hide him and probably get him out of the country or somewhere where he couldn't be found. I don't think this was an individual acting on his own.
On that note, Max, I don't think that this, was an isolated incident, because while the mainstream media and most people, when they talk about this, they are only talking about the attacks that occurred in Charleston, when you had attacks occurred in Memphis, Tennessee, you know, the home of Nathan Bedford Forrest, the, you know, founder of the Klan. They have a great white supremacist. When I say great, I mean like great participation in a pilgrimage to Memphis, Tennessee every year, where they get police protection from a black mayor and black cops. Cause I know, you know, brother Lorenzo Comboa Irvin, former Black Panther Party, former political prisoner, lives in Memphis, him and his wife, Sister Jonina, and they say the majority of the police officers shooting down black people is black. And so here you have black cops and black political class protecting these white supremacists when they come on their pilgrimage every year. Then we look at the attack in Richmond, Virginia. Well, that was the that was the capital of the Confederacy. And then after the war, their transitional government was, guess where? And I just found this out. Charlotte, North Carolina.
I think that these white supremacists who have infiltrated our police forces across America and our judicial positions and attorneys' positions and prosecutors' positions all across America are playing the police like fiddles. They want a race war. And I say race war loosely. What race war literally means to them is killing black people in the streets, because we don't have an army to fight a war. So they want these things to occur, and they're using the police like a tool, like the letter that just recently came out from the Kentucky police, threatening to destroy the lives and kill, if necessary, activists in their area.
And again, you know, that's why I frequently play clips of some of our current political prisoners who were revolutionaries out in the street organizing. We know that that's what they were doing to them. So nothing's changed, man. Nothing's changed. People can say we have made progress. Well, the only progress I see we made is that we can now spend our money in white establishments. That's about it. And we can go to school with white people. So that's about the only if you want to call that progress, then that's about the only thing I see.
Literally, that was one of the points that Frederick Douglass made in the speech we read in South Carolina last night, that during his time, they provided black people with a script to a store, and only one store. And that's where you could spend your money for however long they allowed that script to last. So here we are again, you know, like you just said, we're allowed to spend our money in white establishments, you know, unfettered. So we can give them everything we got. They have no problem with that anymore.
Let me ask you this. I don't want you to go into it now, but if you have it handy, could you share that speech with our listeners later on?
We're in the process right now of getting it produced. It's actually about a 30-minute long speech.
Okay.
20 to 30 minutes long.
Okay.
By Frederick Douglass. And the title is where he denounces the emancipation as a fake and a fraud.
Max, that's why you didn't see me on Facebook talking about Happy Juneteenth.
Right, I tried to educate people about what was going on in Juneteenth. It's really embarrassing to see it happen. And I was involved in it at one time. We've led Juneteenth parades because we thought the same thing everybody else thinks, that slavery ended, and we were celebrating it. And I didn't find out until my 30s that I was celebrating a lie.
Right, and we're not blasting or you know, denigrating or talking about them, you know, in a mean-spirited way, because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know until you seek the knowledge. You don't know until somebody teaches you the truth. And so we're not blasting them, you know, for celebrating Juneteenth, because the masses of the people don't know that that was a straight up lie. They don't know that slavery was never abolished. And so we don't want to insult them. We want to inform them.
Absolutely. Because as Malcolm said, there was a time when we didn't know what we know now. So we were in the same position. All of us were. We weren't born with this knowledge. We actively sought it out and researched and found more. And that's what we hope other people would do too, instead of just assuming that what people are telling you is the truth. Because as you can see now, there's a lot of lies going on. long lies.
Most certainly, most certainly. You know, Max, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I got like several articles that I have in my head that I'm writing in my head. I just haven't had time to put them to paper. But I want to talk to you about one that, you know, people have said, and I'm not singling out anyone because many people are saying it, but they find that, removing these symbols of white supremacy, like the Confederate flag that's on the State House grounds there in South Carolina, the many monuments that we have all across this country, you know, they feel like that's not constructive behavior. That, you know, we should leave these symbols up because it's a reminder of white supremacy. But my position on that is that I don't need a flag. I don't need a school named after a terrorist to remind me of racism and white supremacy, because we got racism and white supremacists in the flesh that will remind us of it every day. All right. And so, you know, without further sharing my opinion, I understand that there was, you witnessed a lot of people out there asking for the removal. Well, let me rephrase that, demanding the removal of that Confederate flag.
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, even Governor Haley just today announced that they want to take it down. I doubt if it's going to happen at all. And as you said, when it comes to removing symbols of racism and oppression and hate, well, you might as well tear the whole country down, because this country is a symbol of racism, oppression, and hate. It was built on slavery. This country, from the bottom up, was built on the backs of enslaved people. So it is in itself a symbol of oppression.
And see, that was going to be the title of my article, though. Don't stop with the Confederate flag. Blow up Mount Rushmore. And I'm not talking about a terrorist act. The government can hire contractors and whatnot to go blow up Mount Rushmore, which is a monument to racist white supremacists and terrorists.
And which was at one time a holy Native American site.
There you go. See, just insult to injury.
Insult to injury. So yeah, yesterday we witnessed a lot of people out there demanding that the flag be taken down. But again, it is just a symbol of oppression. And the symbol that it stands for in South Carolina is the truth that slavery never ended. Like, you know, just looking at that flag, I understand at any moment the police can come and arrest me, my family, my children, and put us into cages never to be seen again. I understand that. And that flag signifies that for me every day. A reminder, if you mess up one time, we've got 24 facilities here, 7,000 people employed in this state directly under the prisons, and any one of them are willing to put you behind bars without a second thought.
Right. And that'll happen anywhere, like here in North Carolina, you know, while these suspect terrorists around here, every once in a while I'll see them, you know, with a big giant flag on their back of their trucks. Or, you know, one time when I was staying in Charlotte, I seen one in the middle of a black neighborhood on a fence. You know what I'm saying? But, we are not flying it as you know what I'm saying. I'm not funding that. My taxes that are paid, my family's taxes, my relatives' taxes, people I know, black people I know, their taxes are not maintaining those symbols. And so, again, because I understand the power of media and propaganda, symbols are very important. If you look at the Nazi regime, symbolism played a big role in promoting their ideologies. So I can see both sides of it, but I just think that if people don't want to pay for those symbols, they shouldn't be forced to.
They shouldn't be forced to. And they shouldn't be subject to the terrorism of seeing a treasonous flag hanging over the capital of the South every single day. And then, you know, to make matters even worse, they lowered the flags to half staff across the state here in South Carolina, except one.
Except for that one.
One flag was allowed to stay at full mast, flying proudly, and that was that Confederate flag.
See, that's a recruitment tool. That's a recruitment tool. So again, I'm viewing it through the lens of warfare. You're supposed to take down the enemy flag. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I was like, when I was in the military, you know, each military company or unit has their own flag. And when we would go out running and stuff like that, I forgot what they called the person, but you would run in front of the formation carrying the company's flag, and you are never supposed to let that flag touch the ground. You know what I'm saying? If you let that flag touch the ground, you have committed a serious offense. And so again, in terms of warfare, these symbols are recruitment tools. They are letting you know, that the war is still being waged. But again, though, I don't need those symbols to remind me of what I know, what I live every day.
Yes, and the media helps to perpetuate this stuff too. In a way, just the Fox News and their like are symbols of racism that are allowed to fly proudly across the nation. Just by them being there on national television, feeding people these propagandas that eventually influence people like this killer to go out and kill people. Because we know that he repeated the words of Ann Coulter right before he killed these people. Like, literally repeated her words verbatim. You're raping our women and taking over our country, and you gotta go. And just 3 or 4 days prior to that, Ann Coulter was on national television saying, immigrants are gonna come into our country, rape our little girls, and take over our country.
In 100 years ago, some other racist suspect was saying the same thing.
Same thing. Constantly force-fed them. So the media has a big responsibility in what's going on here. And as a matter of fact, there is a section of the speech from yesterday which addressed that, where we didn't have mass media in the 1800s, but nonetheless, Frederick Douglass pointed out what the media was doing.
They had periodicals and journals and newspapers. They didn't have what we have today, what we refer to as mass media. You were going to share something else?
Yeah, I'd share that section, which is about a minute long, if you
sure,
want to
hear sure.
that.
Yeah, let's hear that.
All right, this is part of the speech from Frederick Douglass. We are often confronted of late in the press and on the platform with the discouraging statement that the problem of the Negro as a free man and a citizen is not yet solved. That since his emancipation, he has disappointed the best hope of his friends and fulfilled the worst predictions of his enemies, and that he has shown himself unfit for position assigned him by the mistaken statesmanship of the nation. It is said that physically, morally, socially, and religiously, he is in a condition vastly more deplorable than was his condition as a slave. That he has not proved himself so good a master to himself as his old master was to him. That he is gradually, but shortly, sinking below the point of industry, good manners, and civilization to which he has attained in a state of slavery. That his industry is fitful, that his economy is wasteful, that his honesty is deceitful, that his morals are impure, that his domestic life is beastly, that his religion is fetishism, and his worship is simply emotional, and that, in a word, he is falling into a state of barbarism. Such is the distressing description of the emancipated Negro as drawn by his enemies and as it is found reported in the journals of the South. Unhappily, however, it is a description not confined to the South. It has gone forth to the North. It has crossed the ocean. I met with it in Europe, and it has gone as far as the wings of the press and the power of speech can carry it. There is no measuring the injury inflicted upon the Negro by it. It cools our friends, heats our enemies, and turns away from us much of the sympathy and aid which we need and deserve to receive at the hands of our fellow men. Mm-hmm. Frederick Douglass.
Most certainly. And I understand y'all working on getting the entire speech out there.
Yes. Myself, Tribal Rain, and Thomas the Younger, also known as Thomas Washington, stood out there in 105 degree heat, at a monument which has the four stones from Africa, the four countries from Africa that the original slaves were brought forth from, right there in front of us, and a monument to African-American history behind us. It was a statement made to the state, not so much for the crowds, but to the state. We want our freedom, and we know exactly what's happening because our father, Frederick Douglass, told us what's happening and what's going to happen and what is occurring right now here today. As that segment I just read shows you, it applies to today's times and what we're seeing. You know, there's a saying, I believe, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, Thomas, whatever his name, the guy that wrote Huckleberry Finn, what was his name?
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name either.
If I can't think of his name, I'm not going to quote him. Nonetheless, those things are occurring right now today. And maybe later I'll think of his name.
Tom Sawyer? No, it wasn't Tom Sawyer. That's the character.
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Thank you.
Yeah. Mark Twain. I done lost the quote. Anyway, let's skip it for the time being, Scotty Reed. As I pointed out, that is a echo from the past showing us what's happening today. And what Mark Twain said was, history may not repeat itself, but it damn sure does rhyme.
See, it rhymes. Now, on this symbolism, let me take a quick station identification first, and then I want to ask you again about something specific regarding the crowd that was out there. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Again, this is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind these enemy lines. We will be back on the other side after these quick messages.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Live in Houston, Texas, you are invited to the Sunday Out of Coley Shaka Sankofa Community Garden on the first Saturday of the month up until September to learn gardening skills from the head gardener and build together with the community. They are looking for people to come out ready to work and get their hands dirty. You do not have to have any experience in gardening. All food grown from the garden is available to the community. The garden was named after Sundiata Okoli, who is a political prisoner that has been enslaved for more than 40 years, and comrade in struggle, Shaka Sankofa, who was killed June 22nd in 2000. Sundiata, when asked what we can do in support of the political prisoner, said, "Build a garden. We must be able to do for self in the name of self-determination." The garden is located at 2428 Sophomore in Houston, Texas. Again, come out on the first of every month starting around 7 o'clock a.m. If you have an event that is free and open to the public and want to announce it on Black Talk Radio, send an email to admin@blacktalkradionetwork.com. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And the first Saturday, again, that's for the people, our people down there in Houston that want to learn how to garden or just want to come together with black people that's doing something productive, because they are, this, all that food, as you heard, that is grown goes right back into the black community. So the first Saturday of July will be July the 4th. And I certainly hope that you people down there in Houston that y'all will be at this garden, you know, building with other black people, as opposed to going to these 4th of July celebrations that ain't got nothing to do with your freedom. Okay. It ain't got nothing to do with your liberty. And then plus you know, a lot of people drink and stuff and on that day and go to these fireworks shows. And no, man, stay away from them racist suspects and them potential terrorists. Okay. All right. Again, you know, many things we do is programmed into us. So if you've been going to these 4th of July things and waving the flag, I'm not attacking you. All right. I don't have any ill will towards you. I just want you to use critical thinking. I want you to recognize the fact that we are under assault under that flag. Okay. And always have been. And so, yeah, we can start with the Confederate flag one step at a time, but eventually we're going to have to get rid of that corporate flag too. You know, I would actually like to see this corporation dissolved and something replace it that's based on justice. But again, you know, that Saturday, first Saturday of July is July the 4th. plan to meet with black people, but not in celebration of any 4th of July. If anything, have a cookout and talk about abolitionism. All right.
A good idea would be to pick up the short summation by Frederick Douglass that is titled, What Does the 4th of July Mean to the Negro?
Great suggestion.
And read it. Have someone read it to a crowd so you all understand what the 4th of July means.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Max. If you got to go see these fireworks, take that speech, take a soapbox with you, and exercise your First Amendment speech right. And ask that question. What does the 4th of July mean for black people today? And then point out that slavery was never abolished and there's much work to do. Max, I wanted to ask you something specifically. Now, you had told me that the majority of the people that was down there demanding the removal of that flag was white people.
Yes, in Charleston as well. Both in Charleston and in South Carolina, predominantly white people. I would say something like 70-80%.
70-80%. And when you told me that this morning, the first thing that came to my mind was a white person posting on my Facebook timeline saying that she is so sick and tired of white people. I'm paraphrasing what she's saying, and she white. She said, I'm sick and tired of white people. I'm sick and tired of racism, and it is time for white people to do something about racism. And I agree with her in that assessment. And I've heard other, white people say the same things, that they need to work among themselves, not come joining, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement or anything like that, you know, because, you know, black people already know you ain't got to convince us of racism and white supremacy. No, you need to, hey, if you go to a 4th of July cookout, y'all need to have that conversation and put the racists in your family on spot. So, yeah. So,
I believe that you're right. You know, it's been said about President Obama that he is the most divisive president in history. But the same thing was said about abolitionists in the 1800s. And the reason was because the people being divided were white people. They were dividing the opinions of white people into anti-slavery and pro-slavery. And that's what we see right here today. White people are being divided. There's these white people who you just mentioned just a minute ago who are saying it's time for us to stand up and take control of our own narrative, that this is not us, that we believe in freedom and justice and equality, and we do not believe in these things that are being put forth on behalf of all of us. So, yes, that's very divisive, and that's what they're afraid of. That's why abolitionists were also the fear of the racists of the South in those days, because they divided white people by presenting a legitimate, logical argument about how slavery was destroying the country, and it was morally wrong in every sense of the word.
So that's a good suggestion then, huh? For yes. Them on that weekend, you know, to if they believe in the abolitionist message, then preach it. But I wholeheartedly agree with that assessment that white people need to be working in their community to end racism and white supremacy. And there are not a whole lot of you doing that. And I know white people listen to this program. And so, you know, y'all slacking. If you say you believe in justice, then let it not just be words coming out your mouth. And you put some action behind that, you know.
One way you can put some action behind it is by donating to the Black Talk Radio Network and putting your money where your mouth is. We're here leading the way in this abolitionist movement, and we could use the help. And if all you can do is write a check, then please do so.
Sponsor our abolitionists, huh?
Exactly.
So I thought it was interesting, you know, because I'm sure most people probably thought that was not there, and we know how deceptive the media is, where it could be 10 people and they'll like zoom in and make it look like it's a large crowd, you know. And so I bet you a lot of our people thought that the majority of those people down there calling for the removal of that white supremacist battle flag were black, and you were there and you saw, and it was mainly white people.
Yes, mainly white people. But I'm kind of glad, as I said, because it is time for white people to stand up and take control of their own narrative. Stop allowing these racists to dictate who you are across the globe. Because there's people all over the world looking at us going, these are death squads, racist death squads killing black people. And they're not far from the truth. That's what's happening. So you need to stand up and demand that the real narrative of a just people be presented, and then fight against these things that are occurring. We just saw in Mississippi how all of these different politicians are involved with the Council for Concerned, Conserved Citizens?
Hey, many of those Republican presidential candidates is scrambling to return that money. It's the Conservative Citizens Council.
Conservative Citizens Council. Mm-hmm. As long as you have these type of people in government, you're going to have these problems. They have to be purged from our government. They have to be purged from our police forces. They have to be purged from our military forces. We can't afford to have these murderous, genocidal sociopaths in positions of power with guns walking around deciding who lives and dies. We can't afford it.
You know, another thing, speaking of symbolism, I was pleased to see that somebody defaced one of those white supremacist monuments and wrote on there, had spray painted Black Lives Matter on there.
Yes, that was that gave me a giddy moment, and I giggled. I certainly giggled. But, you know, it's a temporary thing.
Again, symbolism.
Right, symbolism.
Symbolism. See, that might inspire somebody else to take the next drastic step and pull the thing down. You know what I'm saying? And so, again, people need to learn the power of symbolism and its use in warfare. All right. And I thought that was great symbolism, and I was going to include it in my article, which, again, I'm, you know, telling people, don't just stop at the Confederate flag, but blow up Mount Rushmore. So, yeah. Now, you were there not to protest that flag, but you were there to spread the message of abolitionism. How receptive were the people that you spoke to?
Very receptive. The people that did attend and were there were very receptive. Even in the videos we released afterwards, people were very receptive of the message. As you pointed out, that was symbolism. And our main concern is we want people freed. We don't want to play games anymore, because every day someone's losing their lives. Not just one person, but many people are dying and being tortured and abused continuously. So our main concern was to make sure that we address the state itself about the circumstances we exist in, mm-hmm. under that Confederate flag, which is legalized slavery. And the best way I felt that we could do that was by echoing the timeless words of Frederick Douglass, which applies to this day and age. And people were very receptive. They stopped, they listened, they asked us questions, and that's how we met up with Rolling Out magazine, because they were there to do a documentary about the Confederate flag and the killings in Charleston, South Carolina. And they heard us speaking and decided that they wanted us to be a part of what they were doing.
Right. And again, I watched it. I shared it on the page for those that are on blacktalkradionetwork.com or follow any of our social media postings. I shared that video, and it was a very proud moment for me. You know, to hear Max talk about new abolitionist radio and
I was wearing a shirt too.
and to tell people I'm an abolitionist.
I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it because I'm about freedom. I'm not about meaningless gestures. I want something real to occur. And to me, something real occurring means freeing people who are in cages for unjust reasons.
Speaking of that, I want to shift gears, Max, to this latest article that was published yesterday by Chris Hedges, who I think does a fairly good job in his media or his media propaganda and putting out articles on slavery. And the title of that article is America's Slave Empire. And they talked about some of our comrades that are in the Free Alabama movement who are currently incarcerated, enslaved in Alabama prison. And these three individuals, Melvin Ray, Brother Ray, who has sometimes called into this program and New Abolitionist Radio, James Pleasant and Robert Earl Council, and they have been thrown into solitary confinement, which is a internationally recognized form of torture, and they've been thrown in there indefinitely because of their resistance movement to slavery right there on the plantation.
Yes, and in Alabama, the prison population is at 200% capacity, and most of the people in there are working every day, not only working to for maintenance within the prison system itself, but also making commercial goods, mm-hmm. as McDonald's, for example. I was kind of hyped that they actually quoted me in the article as well, at least Brother Ray did, stating about the $500 billion a year industry. And as far as I know, I'm the only one that ever tried to add it all up to bring out that number.
Oh, most definitely. You and Johan, man, y'all do a lot of great research and try your best to connect the dots. And again, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything like that. That's an area that I work on in my life, is not being prideful. You know what I'm saying? False pride. But I feel good to know that the work that we've been doing for the past 3 or 4 years in abolitionism, that it is finally seeping out to more and more people. Because, you know, when I interview Angela Chan in the article she wrote, slavery was never abolished. You know what I'm saying? Before New Abolitionist Radio and we started combining our media efforts and getting all this information out there, we weren't seeing this in anybody's press, whether it was the mainstream press or alternative media. But we did speak to Kevin Alexander, and he said in one of his books, he talked about the need for the new, for a new abolitionist movement. And, mm-hmm. and so again, we stand on the shoulders of giants, of people who have put in a lot of work. But I have to say, you know, I feel like the work that we do through New Abolitionist Radio and our Facebook group, who I keep adding new members to every day, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery. I think that while I want to see more, I am by no means satisfied, but I have seen progress where I had not seen before in terms of the national conversation and framing it in the terms of slavery and not mass incarceration.
Right, right. And that's what's taking us so long. And I don't mean us as in you and I and what we're doing, but as a nation in general, is because we're misled by what it is we're facing. You know, we think that we're dealing with a simple shaving cut, but we have a bullet wound. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do here at New Abolitionist Radio and Black Talk Radio Network, is to bring the truth and simplify it in a way you understand it. It's not that hard to grasp as far as what's going on in the United States today with modern day slavery.
Again, talking about symbolism and the importance of symbolism. And I'm going to read a paragraph from Chris Hedges' article, which again, I linked up for you. It's on truthdig.com. And he is again talking about Melvin Ray, James Pleasant, Robert Earl Council, who are the, some of the leading members of the Free Alabama Movement, or our founders of the Free Alabama Movement. And this is what Chris Hedges has to say. The men have become symbols of a growing resistance movement inside American prisons. The prisoners' work stoppage and refusal to cooperate with authorities in Alabama are modeled on actions that shook the Georgia prison system in December of 2010. The strike leaders argue that this is the only mechanism left to the 2.3 million prisoners across America. By refusing to work, a tactic that would force prison authorities to hire compensated labor or to induce the prisoners to return to their jobs by paying them a fair wage, the neo-slavery that defines the prison system can be broken. Prisoners are currently organizing in Arizona, California, Florida, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Mississippi, Texas, Virginia, and Washington. So these are modern-day enslaved African rebellions, and I don't want to leave out the Hispanics, and I don't want to leave out anyone who is working with them on the outside, because it's people of many different ethnicities, religions, and backgrounds who are abolitionists, and they are assisting our brothers and sisters and their own family members that are on these prison plantations. So these are modern rebellions that are occurring on the modern slave plantations.
You know, I've watched Chris Hedges form his opinion over the years. He wasn't like this 5-6 years ago. And we've talked about it before. He's very close to becoming a full-blown abolitionist, if he isn't already. The more he's learned, the more he's realized, and stating right here clearly that this is modern-day slavery. And this is a man that has done as much research, if not more, than us. And he's right there in the prisons dealing with these things. So it's been nice to see him grow in this way. And also, when you mentioned the number of states dealing with the strikes, prison strikes, we had a conversation not too long ago with the Quakers. It was probably the first time that Quakers and abolitionists, slavery abolitionists, got together since the 1800s to discuss these problems. And we found out that the Quakers are inside of at least 17 different prisons across the United States. And when we had that conversation, I called on them then to start working with these prisoners to begin strikes within the prisons. Mm-hmm. And it looks like maybe they are doing that. I would hope that they had their hand in it.
Brother Kinetic, which, you know, I have talked to him before. Again, some of these brothers are able to call in to our station at times and communicate with us through other means. This is what Council, also known as Kinetic, one of the founders of the Free Alabama Movement, told Chris Hedges by phone from the Holman Correctional Facility in Escambia County, Alabama. He said, "We have to shut down the prisons." He has been in prison for 21 years, serving a sentence of life without parole. He said, and this is Kinetic speaking, "We will not work for free anymore. All the work in prisons, from cleaning to cutting grass to working in the kitchen, is done by inmate labor. Almost no prisoner in Alabama is paid. Without us, the prisons, which are slave empires, cannot function. Prisons, at the same time, charge us a variety of fees, such as for our identification cards or wrist bracelets, and impose numerous fines, especially for possession of contraband. They charge us high phone and commissary prices. Prisons each year are taking larger and larger sums of money from the inmates and their families. The state gets from us millions of dollars in free labor and then imposes fees and fines. You have brothers that work in kitchens 12 to 15 hours a day and have done this for years and have never been paid." Now, one thing in this article that, you know, I had read that I disagreed with Chris Hedges, and he needs to correct that, is that just because a person is being paid, whether it's 7 cents, 10 cents, a dollar an hour, I don't care, you know, that's where the term slave wages come from. So just because, you know, if you're like one of the staff members of the guy who, Representative McHenry, who's over the district I live in, got into a debate with me on the phone saying, "Well, I don't look at them as slaves. They being paid and whatnot." Well, where do you think the term slave wages came from? How do you think, former enslaved Africans were able to purchase their freedom if they weren't being paid and they, you know, weren't setting aside some of this money so that they could then play the lottery? And if they hit the lottery, then they'll have money, you know, to purchase their freedom and that of their family members. So people, I don't want y'all to get it confused. Being paid a dollar or two an hour still equals slavery.
This reminds me of sharecropping. Literally, like, reminds me of sharecropping. They did the same exact thing to them. Imprisoned people on these plantations and made them pay for everything that they needed to survive out of the wages, meager wages that they were provided with, or meager shares. And usually they ended up in debt over the years to the point where they would never be free and never be out of debt. So we see the same thing transpiring now in the prison systems where, as Chris Hedges pointed out in one of his other articles, there are men who have worked for 30 years in a prison and got out with nothing. As a matter of fact, they got out in debt, thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. for costs they accrued while in prison.
People, please wake up. Please, please wake up. We need all the new abolitionists we can get. We need all hands on deck. All right. So please, please wake up to the truth. In the very least, you could at least tell somebody that slavery was never abolished. And if they doubt you, then write down the 13th Amendment. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do this for myself. I'm going to print out the 13th Amendment and I'm going to fold it up and I'm going to keep it in my wallet so that when I come across people or I get into conversations and they don't want to believe me, then I could whip out the 13th Amendment and read it to them or let them read it for themselves.
I've been wearing it on my clothing. I made some shirts with the 13th Amendment printed on t-shirts, and I've been wearing in my clothing on my trip out to the North in Boston and Massachusetts and Providence and places like that, so people could see it right there on my clothing. And it started so many conversations, and people were like, where can I get a shirt like that? Like, I only made them for me at this point, but, you know, for the same reasons you just mentioned, I want people to be able to see it with their own eyes.
Most definitely. Well, Max, we're coming to the conclusion of the broadcast as we get ready to transition to Tando Radio Show, coming up at 6 o'clock, hosted by Brother Dave. Is there any final thoughts that you would like to leave with the listeners? And thank you again for spending, time with me and the listeners, this afternoon.
Actually, yes. And it's based on the conversation you were stating earlier about not blaming people for what they don't understand at the moment or don't, you know, can't quite grasp. We had the same situations in the 1800s. And, I have a booklet called, it's a collection of headlines from the 1700s all the way to today through the Black Chronicle newspaper. And in one of those articles is a letter from a former slave that he wrote to his master. And it's very short. I'd like to share it with the audience so you can understand that this is not a new mentality. White Southern Press, runaway slaves, sorry. Letters like this following are being printed by white Southerners newspapers. They are said to be from repentant runaway slaves. My dear master, as I must call you after seeing my mistake in leaving you, my wife and I have decided to return to you. We sincerely hope that you and the rest of the family would take us back and forgive us for what we have done. We are in good health, but my wife is a torment to me daily and nightly. She thinks only of the child she left in the cradle, little Willie. We always tried to act as faithful servants in the family, and we will try to prove the same when we come home. Best love to all, and send us aid for God's sake, as we have no money to pay our way back. We throw ourselves at the feet of your mercy to send us each $39 or $40. Please, sir, write to us immediately. We remain yours, and let us come home. John and Lucy.
Wow. So you think about the psychology that's behind that. You think, cause again, if you know, this man probably out there starving, whatnot, can't feed his family, whatnot. That's why he asking for money, and he willing to return back into slavery. And that's many of us. That's many of us today. That's why we won't quit our prison guard jobs. That's why we won't quit our police officer jobs. That's why we won't quit any of the jobs that directly and indirectly supports racism and white supremacy and slavery, is because we wouldn't know what to do if slavery ended. We just wouldn't know what to do. So,
that's the message.
Say what, Max?
I said that's the message right there.
Yeah. So, you know? Yeah, man.
Well, thanks again, Scotty, for letting me come on the broadcast and speak with you a while. And please tune in Wednesday at 8 p.m. to New Abolitionist Radio. We're going to have a special broadcast this week coming up, a live stream event. So make sure you tune in.
All right, Max. And tell your wife, Tribal, I said hello, and the rest of your family, I said hello. And most definitely keep yourself and your family safe, because you deep behind enemy lines.
Amen to that, brother.
Peace. All right, that was Brother Max Parthas. Again, check out New Abolitionist Radio every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. He posts daily on our Facebook page, New Abolitionist Radio. You can also find him in our group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery. That's a real life, hard-working abolitionist right there in the flesh, following in the footsteps of our elders. All right, so that's the program. Again, I'm going to remind you, we live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. It's Battlefield America. So you have to develop battlefield awareness so that you don't become a casualty, or at least you can minimize the likelihood that you will become a casualty. There's a way you got to move behind these enemy lines, okay? And so, again, just recognize that fact, and then, you know, they say that you're halfway to the solution to the problem is just recognizing there is a problem. So if you want to stay alive, then conduct yourself like you in a war zone. I certainly do. All right, so I will be back on air tomorrow, 4 o'clock p.m., right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. Brother Dave is coming up with a episode of Tando Radio Show. Peace and blessings to all.
The 4th Annual Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo kicks off on July 17th through the 19th in Atlanta, Georgia. The Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo was established in 2012 by Roots to Fruits and the Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Association for the strong purpose of providing quality culturally based resources, educational training, and support to Black African homeschooling, non-homeschooling parents, and educators alike. This work is to assist in the cultivation of excellence and empowerment of our Black children. The Expo also provides a thriving outlet and platform for small Black independent businesses that specialize in retailing and or creating culturally conscious products and or services for the development of our youth. For more information on the Liberated Minds Black Homeschool and Education Expo that will be occurring during the weekend of July 17th through the 19th in Atlanta, go to LiberatedMindsExpo.com.
We see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists. We think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is fixed on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog.